Ladies and gentlemen, a good morning to you. This is John Cameron Swayze in the NBC newsroom in New York. The New Delhi India Radio has just been heard reporting that Mohandas Gandhi has been fatally shot. Gandhi was shot at four times, according to the reports, but at first there was no information as to the seriousness of his wounds. However, the New Delhi Radio has now flatly said the Indian leader was killed and has been heard by NBC monitors in the newsroom. Now, your announcer.
No parent can doubt the importance of a college education or advanced technical training, yet each year countless young high school graduates find themselves without the means to further their educations. Their parents neglected to provide for the future. It takes money to go to college, and the best way to save money and provide for your child's education is the purchase of United States Savings Bonds, the government bonds that pay back $4 for every $3 invested. Dollars put into bonds today will pay off handsomely when the time comes for your child to enter college. Why not begin saving today? Make arrangements at your bank or where you work. Buy a bond this month and every month. Now back once again to the NBC newsroom.
As we noted just a moment ago, NBC monitors just before airtime heard a direct broadcast from the New Delhi India Radio reporting that Mohandas Gandhi had been fatally shot. It had been reported a bit earlier that the Indian leader had been shot at four times, but nothing was known as to the seriousness of his wounds. Details of the assassination are still lacking. His death comes shortly after the conclusion of his latest hunger strike, on which he embarked in what he termed a successful effort to bring peace to strife-torn India and Pakistan. Gandhi was born on October 2, 1869, in India. When he was 13, he married. His wife was the same age. This is a phase of Gandhi's life about which little was said in later years, for as he became more and more the religious leader, the marital relationship was interrupted, and Gandhi and his wife lived apart as he devoted himself entirely to his religious and political tasks. However, four children were born of this marriage. When he was 18, Gandhi went to England to study law, and it was while practicing the legal profession that he became incensed at treatment accorded some Hindu settlers. He renounced his profession and devoted himself to championing the rights of the people. He began his leadership of the nationalist movement in India in 1915. Again, let me repeat, there are, as yet, no details regarding the assassination of Gandhi this morning. In other news, Russia has formally charged the United States with violating the Italian peace treaty, according to a broadcast this morning by the Moscow radio. The Moscow report says the violation occurred when the United States sent warships to Italian ports. This was obviously a reference to the aircraft carrier Midway, three cruisers and 10 destroyers, which have anchored off some Italian ports. Although nothing has been announced about it in Washington, Moscow says the note of protest was sent to the State Department on Wednesday of this week. The Russians are claiming that the American warships are giving at least moral support to the government of Premier De Gasperi, which has been under attack from the Italian communists. This is the second protest in a week, the Soviet government having also complained to both the United States and Britain over the anticipated reopening of an American-built airbase in Libya. A four-motored airplane of the British South American Airways is hours overdue on a flight from the Azores to Bermuda. The plane, a civilian version of the famed British Lancaster bomber, has accommodations for 32 persons, but there has been no word whether it was carrying a capacity load. A London spokesman for the line said that Air Marshal Sir Arthur Conyngham of the RAF was probably among those aboard. There has been no other announcement concerning identities, but most of the passengers are believed to have been British. The United States Coast Guard has ordered a search at sea, and a radio appeal has been sent to all vessels to be on the alert for the big plane. Early today, fire destroyed an historic inn in St. Albans, Vermont, and it's feared four persons died in the blaze. Nearly 100 guests were spending the night at the five-story, 136-year-old Jesse Weldon Inn when the blaze broke out. A number escaped into the 16 below zero temperatures by fighting their way through flames, and several leaped from windows. Several guests were injured, and unofficial estimate of the loss is $200,000. Also in Vermont, the town of Reedsboro is virtually isolated because of the deep snow. The general weather picture this morning finds the cold areas spotty, with parts of New England, northern New York, the Dakotas, and Michigan getting the worst of it. And now it's time for our direct reports. Here's the news from the nation's capital, reported by Lee Feed in Washington.
The way Republicans and Democrats are shoving each other around down here in Washington, they'll all wind up on the spot by November. The White House request for new controls on grain for whiskey makers is considered a political cutie. The president used the Republicans' own anti-inflation law to put them in the squeeze between dries and wets. The House Banking Committee, with at least one eye on Kentucky, a doubtful state, killed the control bill. Kentucky is said to have several distilleries. But a lot of dries all over the country hate to see even one bushel of grain go into the stills. And that makes it quite a problem for the GOP, and at least one big House Republican says the president's request will get very serious consideration. Besides, the president says the distillers can't agree on voluntary agreements, which Republicans offer to fight inflation, and he hints that that proves that the law is no good. Of course, Republicans aren't helpless. Southern threats, practically to secede from the Democratic Party, are music to Republican ears. So they're planning to bring up the anti-poll tax and anti-discrimination bills and wait for the Southern filibusters to begin. They figure that will queer the Democrats with the Negro voters in the North. And, of course, there's a tax cut that has Democrats scrapping among themselves. They're again the Knudsen bill, but they can't agree on one of their own. Otherwise, this morning, the president's all-or-nothing statement on the Marshall Plan is getting a Republican brush-off. Senator Taft says, "I don't think the president's statement changes the situation." This is Leif Eed in Washington.
And now a quick switch to Henry Cassidy in St. Moritz, Switzerland.
The Winter Olympic Games began this morning with a grand spectacle of sport and a demonstration of goodwill among men, marred only by the quarrel between two unreconciled American hockey teams. Amateur athletes of 28 nations paraded into the brilliant, sunlit ice stadium of St. Moritz, 6,000 feet up in the Swiss Alps. The teams, each in the colorful uniform of its sport, were led by Greece, ancient originator of the games. Among the athletes were former allies and former enemies, citizens of democratic countries and communist countries, all united by the common bond of fair competition. There was only one reference to politics. President Enrico Cellio of Switzerland, declaring the games open, called them a symbol of peace that the world awaits. Then a cannon shot was fired, the Olympic game was lit, the flame was lit, and the men, some of whom were trying to kill each other not long ago in war, set out to defeat each other in sport. During the opening parade, the American squad included a hockey team named by the United States Olympic Committee, but on the sidelines was the team designated by the Amateur Hockey Association and accepted by the Swiss because it belongs to the International Hockey Federation. Immediately after the parade, that team, outlawed by the Olympic Federation on grounds of being professional, skated out on the ice and played for the United States against Switzerland. The upshot of the long controversy is this. The AHA team is playing here, but hockey will not be recognized officially as an Olympic sport. In its first game, the unofficial American team lost to Switzerland 5-4. This is Henry Cassidy in St. Moritz.
There's news of interest in Japan. To tell us about it, here's Peter Murray in Tokyo.
Gilbert and Sullivan's operetta, The Mikado, opened at a Japanese theater in Tokyo yesterday. For the first time in history, the words sung by the opening chorus, "If you want to know who we are gentlemen of Japan," were truthfully spoken in Japanese. Japanese audiences flocked to hear the British classic, which has been banned until now in Japan because its gentle spoofing was supposed to be disrespectful to the emperor. One member of the audience who came was the emperor's brother, Prince Takamatsu. I sat two rows behind him and watched. He smiled at least three times, but he did not applaud. When he left a few minutes before the final curtain, he said, "I enjoyed performance very much, very amusing." But he looked puzzled. So did most of the audience. Far from being shocked, most of the Japanese just didn't get it. I asked several men whether they thought there was anything disrespectful about the Mikado, who pranced up and down the stage and in colloquial Japanese sang how he would make the punishment fit the crime. "Oh, no," they replied. "Mikado a very human man, very kind." But one aspect of the production was greeted by shocked silence. That was when the hero kissed the heroine. A kiss on stage was not only out of place, it was unthinkable. Japan may or may not have adopted democracy, but they have not taken to kissing even 2 years after the occupation. This is Peter Murray in Tokyo.
The Bank of France is doing a bit of watchful waiting this morning. For the details, come in Leon Pearson in Paris.
At 5 o'clock this morning, after an all-night session, the French National Assembly voted to approve the government's cancellation of the 5,000 franc notes. At 2 o'clock this afternoon, that is 10 minutes ago, the banks reopened for business. Later this afternoon, the sleepy assemblymen will come back to work to finish their debate on the devaluation plan. It is now safe to predict that Premier Schuman, who staked the life of his government on these monetary reforms, will be supported all along the line. It is an issue, or rather a series of issues, which have surprised and shocked and divided the country. You can't withdraw 37% of a nation's currency in the dead of night and expect everybody to forget about it by tea time. Hundreds of thousands of Frenchmen are staring at their pretty blue 5,000 franc notes, wondering if they will ever get their money back. The answer seems to be that the little people who hold only one or two such bills will be repaid in full. But the fat pocket people will suffer heavily. And this goes for the French farmers who have grown rich in the past few years, selling their butter and beef at black market prices. They are no longer the poor, oppressed peasants like the couple in Millet's Angelus, staring inert in the field. They are the millionaires of France, and they have hidden their millions not in the mattress or the sock, as tradition has it, but in the washtub. The new law means that a lot of washtubs will be emptied all over the French countryside. Here's a late bulletin of a tragic character. Part of the food sent to France by the Friendship train was destroyed early this morning by a terrific warehouse fire on the outskirts of Paris. Police suspect incendiaries. This is Leon Pearson in Paris.
Here are some additional details of the fatal shooting this morning of Mohandas Gandhi. NBC monitors have now heard BBC report an eyewitness account by its New Delhi correspondent, Robert Stimson. Gandhi was shot a few minutes before his evening crown meeting at Birla House. I saw him carried into the house after the shooting, says the correspondent. I was only 10 yards away from Gandhi when I heard 3 or 4 shots. They didn't sound very loud, more like firecrackers. Gandhi fell back, and the next thing I saw were policemen and members of his entourage grappling with a heavy-set man. As soon as it was realized Gandhi had been shot, a terrible cry of grief went up from the crowd. We'll have more news in just a moment, but now, your announcer.
Say there, how's your child's education? You know, a great many American school systems weren't in very good shape when school started last September, and some nice kids were cheated out a full semester of adequate schooling. Was this the case in your local school? Or don't you know because you haven't checked recently? If you haven't, it might be a good idea if you were to drop in and see for yourself the conditions in your child's school. If conditions don't measure up to your expectations, why not do something about improving them? Do what parents have done in countless American communities, from parents' groups and fight for better school conditions. In a great many cases, they have been successful in their fight to improve school buildings, raise wages, and attract capable men and women who prefer good teaching conditions in an alert community. You can make sure that your schools are worthy of your children. So join one of your groups. If you do not have any groups, form them. Now again, back to the NBC newsroom.
With reference again to the fatal shooting of Mohandas Gandhi this morning in India, we now understand that the assassin is a civilian Hindu from Pune. He was taken by police immediately after the firing of the shots. Opinion differs as to whether 3 or 4 shots were fired. However, Gandhi was shot from a range of only a few feet. The accused man has been taken to a police station, and he is now being held incommunicado. Gandhi's secretary told the Associated Press as he wept, "Bapu is dead." Bapu, spelled B-A-P-U, was a familiar, affectionate name for the Hindu leader that we didn't hear very much over in the United States. Gandhi was 78. And that seems to be the story, ladies and gentlemen. I'm glad we could get together. This is John Cameron Swayze saying goodbye from the NBC newsroom in New York.
This is NBC, the national broadcasting company.